I understand that you'll speak when you're ready. But your parents have already lost one child. It'd make them feel a lot better.
It won't.
Why do you think that?
I'm a monster.
I see a young lady who did something very brave.
I killed my brother.
To save the life of two children.
No one will ever look at me the same way again.
Dr. Philip Decker, interview with multiple homicide survivor Danielle Shipman, November 8th, 1980.
Danny barely talks on the three-hour drive, but I managed to pry the story out of her. Julia called yesterday, told her that she and Heather were heading to Red Lake in one of Maryland's big armored SUVs. They could pick her up or meet her there. She told them not to wait. What about Sky?
They had a big fight with his mom.
Danny shifts lanes to pass a slow-moving Subaru.
Told her they had a safe location, but couldn't tell her where it was. Told her the kids could come, but she couldn't. Made up a story about keeping people spread out. She told them her kids weren't going anywhere without her. She couldn't stop the older one from leaving, though. Her little one stayed behind.
That's something. Other cars are passing us. If I were in the driver's seat, I'd have floored it. We'd be flying. We'd be screaming forth to rescue our people. But Danny drives like she's on her way to pick up some hay. I wrote down Julia's, Marilyn's, and Heather's numbers and gave them to Stephanie. She's been calling since we left the ranch.
Any luck?
She's hunched over her cell phone, texting away.
Keeps going to voicemail. I've tried texting, but none of them show as being read. I requested a delivery report, but it doesn't look like they're going through.
Is there a landline at the camp?
Googled it, called, got voicemail.
I really want Danny to step on it. He may have already started, although it's still light out. Most monsters will wait until dark.
We need a plan, so we don't fall all over each other like the Three Stooges. You want to try to put something together?
Nope.
And that's pretty much that. I want to press my foot down over hers on the gas pedal, but I have to get on Danny's wavelength if this is going to work. So I wait. 20 miles later, she asks me the big question.
What are you proposing to do with Dr. Carroll's boy?
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to hurt him. I don't want anyone else to get hurt. I'm sick of people dying.
Before sunrise tomorrow, people are going to die. Pretty sure of that.
It's so cowboy, I almost laugh. But I don't. Because in my gut, I know she's right. She always is. We hit traffic outside Bakersfield, and by the time we're headed up into the mountains, it's late afternoon. We've all been lulled into a stupor by the long drive, and as the truck starts to wind up the switchbacks, I feel the adrenaline draining out of my veins. I'm feeling wrung out.
There, is that it?
Up ahead, we see the sign for Camp Red Lake, and Danny slows. It's small and discreet on the side of the road, the way Adrian wanted. Just yellow paint on dark red boards, spelling out Camp Red Lake. Danny rotates the wheel and the truck splits off the road and glides onto the blacktop leading up the hill where Red Lake lies. The county isn't responsible for this road. Red Lake is, and it's paved with seamless black asphalt so new it sparkles. Halfway up the mountain, shadows getting long, Red Lake up above us, Danny takes a turn off.
What are you doing?
Gotta piss. Better get it over with before we get there. Gotta get the guns out of the back, too.
She parks in a pullover that looks out over the valley. There's a picnic table with an empty Diet Coke can on it, a scenic view sign, a running path heading off into the brush. It's paved with chalky white rocks.
Wait here.
She gets out of the car, detours to take the Diet Coke can and throw it away, then walks into a row of scrub about 30 feet in front of us. I notice that Steph is rustling through her backpack in the seat behind me.
We really do need to come up with a plan.
I start to turn around. A sledgehammer hits me in the back of my head and my eyeballs compress, then go black. When my vision returns, my head is halfway outside the car, sunlight stabbing my eyes, and it feels like my skull's the size of a beach ball. I want to lift my head to look back into the truck, and a sheet of shattered safety glass rains down on my neck, falling down into my shirt. Steph crawls over the seat and settles behind the wheel. There's my little .22 in one of her hands. I can't smell anything. My face won't move. My body doesn't work. She looks at me and reaches over my shoulder. I try to lift my arms, but they have pins and needles running up and down them. Steph yanks the door handle and it swings open, dumping me out on the rocks. I'm tangled in my seatbelt, and then it comes free, and I sprawl on the ground. In my peripheral vision, I see Danny coming out of the bushes, buttoning up her jeans. I want to scream and warn her, but I can't even do that. The car door slams far above me, and an engine starts. The truck rolls over both my legs, but it doesn't feel like anything compared to my head. The tires roar over the gravel. Then Danny is sailing backward. I see her smash into a tree midway up the trunk, and her body bends in a way it shouldn't. And then she bounces forward and lands face down on the edge of the parking lot. Stephanie reverses back to where I lie and turns off the truck. She gets out. I want to see where she's going, but I can't turn my head. I hear car doors opening and closing, and then I space out for a little while, and when I come to, I'm hearing footsteps crunch through the gravel and squat down next to me.
You stupid statistic.
Did she think Danny was going to hurt us? Or was too suicidal to be trusted? Was she confused? Did I do something to make her think I would hurt her? But I know what the real answer is. She's not one of us. She's never been a final girl. Chrissy was right. She's a monster.
It's a pussy pistol, but it's the thought that counts. You idiots with your machetes and your martial arts. If you want to rack up an adult-sized body count, you need some Smith & Wesson.
I feel limp, squeezed out, empty. All I can do is lie on the ground and die. I look up along her long arm and see that her face is a black sun radiating waves of hatred and contempt.
You think you're such a badass. Do you know how pathetic you are? I've watched one person after another take you down. And when it was my turn, it was even easier than I thought. You've had other people holding your hand for your entire life. You're not even a real final girl.
She leans down and holds her finger under my nose.
Fuck, you're still breathing. Okay, I guess I need something a little heavier. Don't go anywhere.
She crunches over to the truck. I hear the zippers of gun cases. There's a shotgun being pumped. Then her sneakers crunch back over the rocks and re-enter my field of vision. I've been played. I've been a moron. I brought her right up here into the heart of Red Lake. I was wrong about Sky. I was wrong about everything. And now I'm going to die. Death actually is a moment of clarity. And in this instant, I know Steph's right. I've needed other people's help my entire life. I keep thinking I've cut myself off, but there have always been other people. The only thing I'm going to do on my own is die. My head is enormous and numb, and even blinking gives me a headache, so I stop and stare up at Stephanie standing over me. She's very, very tall, and I see that she has one of Danny's shotguns hovering over my face. She steadies the barrel. The big empty circle rests right over my forehead. My brain sends my body signals to run, to move, to get out of the way, but my muscles have all gone on strike.
I really freaked out when he showed up at my front door. I thought you'd actually figured something out. But then you took me on a super bonding soul sisters road trip. You've wanted someone to put you out of your misery for years. So relax, you suicidal tendency. I'm the final girl. And you're just last year's... What have you got to smile about?
She snarls that last bit because my eyes have shifted to the right and I can't help it. I've twitched my mouth up just a little. Steph follows my gaze and her face falls.
Shit.
Danny is gone. I hope she's running right now. I hope she's on her way up to Red Lake to warn everyone, to get help, to get ready for this monster. Let me be the sacrifice that buys them time. Let Danny get to them, and then they'll come down on Stephanie like the wrath of God. Steph walks to the bushes, holding the single-barreled shotgun to her shoulder, barrel down at a 45-degree angle, ready to bring it up and punch a hole through Danny the second she spots her. She pauses and looks back at me, debating which way to go. I want to shout, run, Danny, go! But my head is mush, and I think I can make my right cheek twitch if I concentrate hard enough, but that's about it. I wonder how I look with half my skull missing. Maybe I move because Steph cocks her head at me, then gives up and turns back to the bushes, but she's too late. She may have been ready for me, but she's not ready for Danny. 6 feet of ranch hard muscle rises up out of the bushes and grabs the barrel of the shotgun and deftly turns it away from herself, and then Danny punches Stephanie in the throat. The blow snaps Stephanie's chin to her chest, and the gun goes off. Danny stands crooked, hunched over, in pain. something broken inside her. But she controls the barrel of the shotgun and keeps it pointed away while punching the side of Stephanie's head with her fist over and over again. Then she twists the gun and it comes out of Stephanie's grasp, and Danny brings the stock down on the small of Stephanie's hunchback. Stephanie hits the ground face first, and Danny limps away from her, coming toward me. Her face looks pale. Her lips move soundlessly. Her teeth are caked with blood. She drops heavily to her knees, sets the shotgun down, and I realize she's crying. I'm pretty sure it's from the pain.
Please.
She reaches a cut-up hand to the side of my face. That's when Steph rises up behind her. I want to shout something. I want to warn her, but my face isn't working. I think my brains might have seeped out onto the gravel. Danny senses something is wrong, and she turns right into the butt of the shotgun, smashing dead center in the face. Stephanie is grinning. And then Danny grabs Stephanie's ankle and pulls, dumping her on the ground. I'm running, hobbling fast, limping away from me, leaving big fat droplets of blood in her wake, disappearing back into the bushes. Steph scrambles to her feet, aims the shotgun, pulls the trigger. Steph runs to where Danny disappeared, pumping shell after shell into the shotgun and firing again and again, then stopping and scanning to see if she can detect Danny, then firing again. I don't think this thunder will ever stop. Finally, there's silence. A bird starts to sing. Stephanie stands over me again. I realize that I have to play the oldest trick in the book, the one I used before with Ricky Walker. I play possum. Stephanie bends over and feels for my breath, but I've stopped breathing. I dimly feel her tug on my right earlobe, and I think she's pinching it, but my head is made of wood. I don't move. She spits on one of my wide, staring eyes. I lie still.
This one doesn't even count. She basically killed herself.
She walks over to the truck and throws the shotgun in the passenger seat. Shotgun riding shotgun, I think stupidly to myself. She starts the engine. The truck idles for a minute, and I think she's changing her mind, but I can't allow myself to turn my head to look because I know she's watching me. Relief floods my veins like a drug when she roars out of there, leaving a cloud of white dust hanging in the air. I lie still for a minute, brains spilling out in the dirt. And I wonder who's going to warn Red Lake. I wonder if Danny made it up there to tell everyone what's happening. I wonder if Steph is going to get there first and cut through them like a bullet. I lie there and wonder who's going to save the day. And blood pools around my head. And I die.
Now, I understand that fear can be fun. I myself love roller coasters. That little flutter of anticipation when they lower the safety bar. That thrill when you fly around the big curve and you feel like this time it might really be out of control. That whole all over the body sense of relief when it brings you safely home. But what does it say about us that so much of the entertainment we consume is about killing women? I want you to think about that. How is the murder of women fun? You go to the big new thriller. You finish your popcorn. Go out for dinner. Talk about the plot twist with your friends. It's just another part of your evening out. But no one brings that woman safely home. Her body is left back there on the screen while everyone goes on with their lives. Let's think about what that means. Let's think about what's wrong with us.
Speech by Adrian Butler, Cincinnati, Ohio, January 2010.
Bushes fall before my wrath. I hurl myself into trees. I keep pushing up the mountain with the balls of my feet until my calves ache the way my swollen, broken head does.
Stupid.
I don't say it out loud because every sound hurts my shattered skull. My entire world is getting up this hill, one foot after the other. And no matter how much my muscles scream, no matter how much my chest burns, I don't stop. I'll only stop when I'm dead, which might be sooner than I think.
Stupid girl.
I take another step. The world spins around me.
Stupid fucking girl.
I take another step.
Stupid dumb fucking girl.
Standing up in that parking lot was the hardest thing I'd ever done. Pain nailed me to the dirt. Even getting spiked on those antlers didn't hurt like this. The only person who could make me stand up was Adrian.
What are you lying there for, Lynette?
She looked down at me.
Can't.
You can. You know why? Because if you don't get up, then all that time I invested in you was a waste. It'll mean I failed. And I don't fail. I grew up in a high-pressure household, Lynette, so failure is hard on me. So if you give up, then little perfect Miss Adrian has screwed up too, and that's going to be hard for me to reconcile.
She knelt by my head, and I felt her hands slip beneath my armpits. And I felt my body bending in all the wrong ways, tendons screaming, muscles shaking. And then I stood, swaying in the middle of the parking lot, standing over a puddle of my own blood, alone. Now I'm getting up this mountain if it kills me, and it just might, because everything hurts so much. And then I fall to my knees because the woods are gone, and I'm kneeling in pine cones on the edge of Camp Red Lake. On the other side, a big pinewood sign shouts, "Welcome," and behind it, a vast green lawn leads me to the main lodge, its raw logs glowing orange in the pink twilight. Didn't count on Billy Walker getting there first, did you, Stephanie? Goddamn titanium plate in my head, you moron. I never thought that one day a Walker brother would save my life. But after Ricky left me with half my skull caved in, they had to insert a plate to hold my head together. Stephanie plinked me right in the middle of it with her little .22. Scalp wounds bleed like stuck pigs, and I'm scared to look in a mirror. But for now, I'm alive. But it hurts. Oh God, it hurts so bad. I push myself up onto my feet and stagger forward on what feel like broken ankles. Eyes locked on the main lodge. And then I'm stumbling over hard asphalt and I look down and I'm in the circular drive that runs in front of Camp Red Lake. And I look up again and I start to cry. No fair. No fair. Ahead of me sits Danny's enormous red F-150. The driver's side door stands open and all my willpower drains out through my feet because Stephanie is already here. I haven't heard any shooting, but my head is a ringing, roaring waterfall of pain. That climb up the hill, wanting to die every step of the way, it was all for nothing, because Stephanie is already here and everyone I know is dead. I lean against a parked SUV, probably one of Marilyn's armored monsters, and I avoid looking at my reflection in its shiny sides. Even with the titanium plate, Steph's bullet hurt me. My brain aches with damage. Even if everyone else is dead, I'm going to stop her. I start limping toward the main lodge. I don't want to hurt anyone, but I have to stop her before she hurts more people. My stride lengthens. My feet sink into soft grass. The lodge sways from side to side, and my head is a pulsating pain bulb at the end of my neck. I push myself up the steps, walk between the massive cedar columns still wrapped in yellow crime scene tape, and drag my legs over the pine plank porch. Push open the front door and step inside. Everything smells like wood. Enormous age-lacquered beams support the roof two stories overhead, its rafters and ridge piece lost in the late afternoon gloom. A towering fieldstone fireplace anchors one end of the vast lobby, and a mezzanine circles the rest. Someone stapled Polaroids of grinning sisters and their families to every surface, encrusting the posts with women bearing white teeth, arms slung around each other's shoulders, while sign-up sheets, bulletin boards, Xerox schedules, and safety posters spin in and out of the shadows around my throbbing head. In front of me sits the circular welcome desk, and over it, aged iron letters spiked to the wall spell out, "Sisters all." Except Stephanie. She's the piece that sticks out, the one that doesn't belong. Where is everyone? Where are my sisters? Are they hiding? And what about the staff? They'd closed down after Christoph Volker came, but a skeleton crew still has to be here. 8 people? 10? A whispering voice inside my skull tells me it only ever gets this quiet when everyone is dead. 2 arrow-shaped signs hang on either side of the front desk. Rope letters on the one pointing to the right reading Tuck Shop, and rope letters on the one pointing left reading Dining Porch. That's what I want. It's almost 5. People are going to want to dine. Defenseless, I enter the Minotaur's maze, limping left, pushing through two swinging doors made of rough wood still covered in bark, and I walk into the mess hall. Big slabs of pale pine march away from me in orderly rows like autopsy tables with empty benches on either side. An abandoned canoe hangs upside down from the ceiling, and the entire far wall consists of glass doors leading out onto the dining porch. A bloody handprint smack in the middle of one is the only sign of life. A sign reading, salad/sundae bar, sways gently over a pile of laundry on the floor. I lower myself, knees popping, and realize this boneless sack of clothes is the body of a woman. I turn her over. Not much of her skull is left. Her face is smeared across the floor. I wonder if she was pretty. I wonder if she was happy. I wonder who her sisters were. She wears a Red Lake t-shirt, and the name tag on her right breast is obscured by biological matter. I wipe it away with my thumb. I'm so sorry. Marcy, I mean it more than I've ever meant anything. I look into the kitchen where another person lies face down, their t-shirt saturated dark red. This one looks like a man. Stephanie was here. How many people have died because I trusted her?
Something bumps politely against a wall, and I whip my head around, sending pain spiking through my temples. I see a storage closet door close tight and make my way over and stand to one side because it has a porthole window in the middle and I don't want whatever's in there to see me. I give the door a push. It doesn't move, but maybe it's just heavy. I brace myself and push again, and it rattles against its deadbolt lock. I hear something creak inside. Why would Stephanie lock herself in a storage closet? She wants to be out here, killing people. I press my face to the glass. It's dark, so I cup my hands and look. Something moves in the dimness.
Hey!
I pray my voice hasn't traveled too far in the building. I tap one knuckle against the glass. Whatever it is moves again.
I see you.
Whoever it is rolls backward, deeper into the dark.
Are you hurt?
Lynette?
Julia!
The deadbolt snaps. Something flashes on the edge of my vision, and I duck down and spin, catching a flock of birds lifting off from the wide lawn outside. Silver sparks from their wings. Julia comes out of the closet in her chair, a low, sturdy model with big, rugged wheels that slant in at the top. Behind her stand two numb teenaged boys and a nervous woman who looks like she goes camping a lot.
Lock it behind me. We'll get you when it's safe.
They obey, and I feel so tired that it's only Julia, that there are still more people left to find, that Stephanie is still out there killing.
What the hell is going on?
It's Stephanie. Stephanie Fugatti.
Julia's forehead knits in the middle for a minute and then goes smooth.
The Red Lake girl? The one you kidnapped? Jesus Christ, Lynette. Your people skills are shit. She's walking around here with a machine gun.
I don't think she has a machine gun.
Let's stand here and argue about the caliber of weapon the girl you thought was your new best friend is using to murder everyone.
My brain gives a dark throb that makes me want to throw up.
You look like shit, so I forgive you. Cell phone service is down, but there's a landline in the nurse's station we can try for.
We start to move.
What about Heather and Marilyn?
Down by the lake with everyone else. I came up here to get sunscreen. About 20 of the staff are having a memorial service for Adrian.
I'm not listening. I'm standing still. From this angle, I can see past the bloody handprint on the glass doors, around the lone tree that blocked my view of the middle of the wide green lawn before. A person sprawls on the grass. I recognize the flannel shirt. Julia looks where I'm looking.
Is that?
You get the phone. I'll get Danny.
I start outside, but Julia cuts me off at the French doors.
You think I can't do stairs?
She zips around me. Julia's already at the lip of the dining porch when I get outside. She leans back in her wheelchair, puts one hand on the banister, and practically flings herself down the three steps to the ground, her wheels absorbing the impact.
Shag your ass!
I try to keep up. Running makes my head sick, so I walk fast, looking behind us, checking the approaches, left, right, ahead, behind. A scattering of trees rise from the lawn, but otherwise it's totally exposed. Clear sight lines from every direction. Far to the right sits the campfire amphitheater and stage. Ahead of us is the tree line, the air between the trunks already dark purple. Back in those trees are the cabins, and beyond them lies the lake where 20 more victims wait for Stephanie. Danny doesn't look good. Her legs point in two different directions, neither of them natural. She's face down in the dirt, mouth open. I notice with relief her shoulder blades moving up and down. She's breathing.
Put her legs across my chair to help with the weight. We need to get back inside and get to the phone.
I can't. I'm going to rest for a minute. I'm too tired. The ground pulls on my hips. I need to sit. I crouch, not sure how to make it down safely.
What are you doing, Lynette?
I need to rest.
What are you doing, Lynette?
Adrian is walking with me across the lawn. My clothes stink of cordite. She's wearing a white sweater and jeans. Trying not to get killed.
That's enough for you? Continued respiration? That's all you have to offer the world?
It's a good place to start. I wish you would stop making me feel so guilty all the time.
You need to protect your sister.
My mom stands over me while Jilly wails into the side of her neck.
I'm no Yoda, but you think your sister died so you could quit? You think Tommy died so you could stop when things got too scary? There's more to life than staying alive.
Oh, shut up, Adrian.
You wouldn't feel so guilty if you didn't know I'm right.
Gravity wins. My butt thuds onto the grass. A hard jolt goes up my spine. My head floods with hot blood. The lawn turns into a merry-go-round and spins me past the lodge. Far away, back by the lodge, a black insect runs at us. I watch it get bigger and come into focus. It's a man in black tactical gear wearing a gas mask. There's some kind of automatic rifle bouncing on his back, but in his hands he's carrying an axe, just like Ricky Walker. His legs are moving, eating up the grass between us.
Oh shit!
Julia bends from the waist, pawing at Danny.
Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit!
He's seen us, and I don't know who he is, but he picks up his pace, and I feel so tired, but I swing my head down to the tree line, and it's not so far away.
You can.
I push myself to my feet, and the world gives another lazy revolution, and my head swimming in a sea of pain, and I pray that not everything around here has changed too much over the past 10 years.
You need to protect your sister.
I grab Danny's belt and try not to listen to the popping sounds as I haul her up, then sling her around, and her legs hit Julia in the chest, and I let her take some of Danny's weight, and I stagger forward. My stomach heaves, my brain throbs, and I stumble fast for the tree line. Julia keeps up, both hands shoving her wheels down hard, her chair flying along beside me, my head exploding with every jolting step, and the tree line rocks wildly in my vision, and the back of the first cabin emerges from the trunks, and I correct our course. Something chatters behind me, and the air flutters overhead. He stopped to shoot. I hope he stopped to shoot. Every foot we put between him and us is safety. Up ahead, Heather slouches out of the trees, carrying a green beer bottle, and Marilyn emerges beside her in some kind of summer dress and a big straw hat situation, a giant handbag over one shoulder.
Julia! Get that cabin open!
The cabin made of wood? The cabin full of windows?
Then Julia's tearing across the grass in her chair, tires chewing it up like a lawnmower, thrusting me at last, and I'm staggering under Danny's full weight. And Marilyn's there, ducking under Danny's other arm, knocking off her straw hat. And something chatters behind us again, and Danny gets shoved forward, and I feel the impact travel all the way down to the aching soles of my feet.
Paul, Lynette!
Marilyn and I drag Danny between us, the world bouncing painfully, and then the dark trees close around us. And I see Julia make some kind of daredevil turn in her chair, the whole thing almost tipping over, spraying up big plumes of dirt. And she throws herself up 3 steps into the cabin, hitting the door with her body, pushing it open, leaving her chair toppled on its side, one wheel spinning.
Oh, fuckity fuck!
Heather's in next, and then I find the strength to shove myself up the stairs and through the door, hauling Danny. And Marilyn gets it closed just as Death slams into it from the other side. Julia looks up from the floor.
It's made of fucking wood!
Marilyn takes in the 6 big windows marching down the wooden walls, 3 on each side, glowing with afternoon light. They see the wooden walls, the splintery floor, the planks on the door, but none of them spent the time here with Adrian that I did. I drop Danny's lead onto Marilyn and lunge at the bed on my right, stretching, reaching, praying. A booted foot hits the door, shaking it in its frame. My finger slams into a knothole in the wall at the end of the bed, wood scraping the skin off my knuckle, and I rip it out and wear the wooden square like a ring as I punch the red button it hid with my other hand. The cabin tears itself in two. Marilyn shrieks, Heather drops her beer. Julia covers her ears. 6 deadbolts shoot home in the door. Wooden boards drop from the top of the frame of each window, and I run to them, dizzy, catching my hip on the edge of the bed. Grabbing the double handles they expose with both hands, yanking them down, slamming metal shutters over the windows.
Help me!
Marilyn gets 2. I get 4. At the end, I vomit thin gruel. Julia looks up from the floor.
It's still what?
We hear the machine gun rip, and I recognize the sound. Even without the LA street cannon making it echo, it's the same kind of gun that turned my apartment into a shooting gallery last week. The cabin is dim now. The door vibrates in its frame, but no splinter holes appear. It doesn't fall apart. Glass shatters, but the steel shutters only do a spastic shimmy as bullets tap dance across their surface. They hold. Panic cabins. Adrian had them built so I'd feel safe. Steel shutters. The doors and walls have steel sandwiched between the wood. The floors poured concrete underneath the planks.
Cool!
Heather walks to the door.
Fuck you, Gimp!
Whoever it is puts another half clip in the door.
Well, now we're stuck! Good plan, Lynn!
We call for help. Whose phone works?
No one. We're essentially fucked! Danny's bleeding too much!
Julia applies pressure to Danny's back. There's fresh, wet blood all over her clothes, her arms, her face.
So, we're stuck in a cabin, there's a killer outside with a machine gun, Danny's going to die, and we have no way to call for help. Ugh. Guess I'll have to save us all with my fucking superpowers.
She lies down on one of the cots and flips a blanket over herself, nuzzling into the pillow.
You're going to sleep? I've got a condition.
I'll call 911.
Marilyn reaches into her straw handbag and pulls out a phone that looks slightly thicker and chunkier than average.
No reception.
Haven't any of y'all heard of a satellite phone?
I can't hear anything outside. I don't know if the monster is waiting by the door or if he's gone to the lake. I don't know where Stephanie is or what she's doing. I don't even know if this is Stephanie. Where did she get all this gear? But it doesn't matter. I shove the counselor's bed aside.
Ugh, quit making so much noise.
Hello? I'd like to report an active shooter situation.
I put 2 fingers in another knot hole, this time in the floor, and lift a larger panel to reveal a bolted trap door.
What the hell?
There are 20 of Adrian's people by the lake.
You can't!
I don't listen. Just release the hatch and jump through into the soft, cool sand underneath the cabin. I stand up, bolt it behind me. Then I duck down and reconnoiter. The slit of light between the bottom of the cabin and the ground looks clear. No legs in black combat pants, no tactical boots. I scramble through the sand toward the front of the cabin. Behind me, I hear the trapdoor bolt slam into place. Good. I scramble out on my hands as my knees give out and stand, swaying. The trees and cabins rock dangerously, and shadows rush in around the edges of my vision, but I see a brighter light in front of me through the trees, and I know that way lies the lake. The shooter can't be there yet. They'll have to pass 3 more rows of cabins, the chill-out yurt, the nature observatory, and the sweat lodge. Behind me, the splintered facade of the cabin shows scorched galvanized steel peppered with charred pockmarks. I stumble run to my left, heading parallel to the lake, and when I reach the end of the row of cabins, I put my hands around my mouth, pull a deep breath into my bruised lungs, and turn my body into a single shout.
Stephanie!
I hear my voice echo up into the tree canopy high above. I'm still alive! You want me? Come and get me! I'm winded. Black spots flicker and strobe in my vision, and then one of them swarms at me with a purpose, and I realize it's dropping to one knee and I see fire flicker from its shoulder, and bees scream past my face, tugging my hair in their wake. I turn and run. The wellness barn looms up ahead of me in the gloom, a big red wall of wood with peaks on either end facing me like raised eyebrows. It's the biggest building at Red Lake after the main lodge, built back in the early 90s when Adrian took over. It's full of EDMR rooms, narrative medicine offices, art therapy studios, lots of rooms, lots of doors. A labyrinth where I can get whoever this is lost, keep them angry, make them waste their time, stay focused on me, not the 20 soft targets down by the lake. I'll lead them in one side, then up through the studios to the far end of the second floor where there's a secret crawl space in the walls. It's a game of hide and seek, and by the time they give up, the police will be here. The French doors come up, and I put out my hands to stiff arm them open. And as I crash through them in a shower of wood and glass, I remember too late, they don't push, they pull. And then I'm tripping over their shattered bottom rails, sliding across the floor of the entrance atrium on the heels of my hands. My head swims in a sea of pain. Everything smells like lemongrass and cinnamon, and the cool tinkling of a feng shui water feature in the corner would ease the pain in my skull if I hadn't just gotten shot in the head. Suspended stairs flowed up one wall to the second floor, and skylights let pink light stream in from high above. On the wall, someone's painted in flowing script, "Sometimes all we have left is a wish and a hope." Then the air explodes behind me and bullets stitch across wishes and hopes. I force myself to my feet and there's no time. They're on my heels. The stairs are too exposed, and I lurch to the right and crash through the first studio door. I barely have the door closed before a body hits it high and hard. It almost comes off its hinges, but I manage to hold it shut, pressing it into the frame. There's silence from the other side for a moment. Then the blade of an axe slaps through the wood, almost splitting my left hand. I yank it back and snap the deadbolt into place as death hacks the door into pieces. I hear myself sob. The door comes apart too fast. I think I might have made a serious miscalculation. The door explodes out of its frame, pancaking to the ground, almost taking me with it. And I'm running, my head a throbbing bag of blood. Then something sweeps my legs out from under me, and in the wall of mirrors to my right, I see a bloody scarecrow going ass over heels as I trip over a yoga ball. I turn, shove myself up, give it a kick, and the pink ball lifts off the floor, launching itself straight at the ruined door and into the shooter, knocking their knees out from under them. They fall down, letting go with their gun, and the mirrored wall explodes into silver triangles and shattered circles that rain to the floor. Every studio in the wellness barn has two doors, and I fly through the next one and stumble into a wall of world music, crash through a display of healing crystals, take a massage table in the hip. The spectral sounds of the universe swirl around me. Harps glissando, chimes vibrate, crystal keys clink out the mysteries of life. I stumble across tatami mats while the aching music of oneness picks me up and tries to carry me away, and I make it out the next door as the shooter comes in. The next studio is L-shaped, and it's music therapy, and the shooter is too close for me to do anything but run. They fire, and xylophones explode, cymbals roar in a frenzy as bullets shred a drum kit, and guitars explode with hollow pops filling the air with raw spruce splinters. I turn the corner of the L, and my feet shoot out from under me, and my brain splits down the middle as I hit the floor hard with one shoulder, and I scramble to my feet and keep moving, that I realize my plan has failed. I can't lose them. They're too close. I launch myself at the door ahead because I don't have a plan anymore. And then I have a plan.
You need to protect your sister.
I'm the decoy. I'm the distraction. I'm the sitting duck. I just need to keep them here while everyone else gets away. I just need to run out my string. Adrian was right. There's more to life than staying alive. The door flies open under my hands, but not fast enough, and I hit it with my forehead. And I'm in a long room full of pink and white streamers and helium balloons and Adrian's favorite colors, and there are cupcakes and soft drinks, and I've gone back in time. I'm in first grade, and part of my brain knows it's a reception for after Adrian's memorial, but part of me is a child, screaming, running. I'm quick as a bunny, Mom! The shooter comes in behind me too fast, too close. And they squeeze off rounds that evaporate balloons and top streamers to confetti and dig into the far wall painted with tribal designs. And I'm every girl who's ever run from a man with a weapon. Every girl who ever ran for her life across spaces where she was supposed to be safe. I crash into the next studio, and I'm Julia running through her dorm. I'm Heather running down her high school halls. I'm Marilyn running through the Texas afternoon. I'm Danny running through a hospital. I'm Adrian running through this camp. This camp where there will always be a girl running and screaming and screaming. And I'm Lynette, running at last, and he can't catch me. I'm as fast as all of us put together. I'm faster than Billy Walker. I'm faster than the ghost. I'm faster than the entire Volker family. I'm the fastest girl in the world. I push myself, sprinting, legs pumping, head bouncing on the end of my neck. And this is it. This is my last race. And I slam the wooden door open and run into the humid chlorine cloud of the aqua therapy studio. I can trick the shooter into one of these pools in the concrete floor, force them down, use their heavy gear against them, but they're already in the doorway and I don't even have time to slam it in their face. They shove it open with their elbows, gun raised, and I fall forward, the steel tubes of a pool ladder chipping my pelvis, and one foot goes in warm water, and I pull it out and slosh, limp, slosh across the room as fast as I can to the three doors in a row that are the only place left to run. The pain in my head is so bad I'm almost blind. The door on the far right is in front of me, and I'll get inside. I won't stop. I'll crash through the window on the opposite wall and make it outside and hide in the woods. I crash inside, and there is no window. There is no other door.
It's an individual hydrotherapy room. All sandstone tile and big white tub and a toilet and a sink and a massage table. And the door flies open behind me and knocks me forward, and I'm tumbling, stumbling, feet flying. And I take the lip of the tub high in my thigh, and my feet go over my head, and I'm sprawled across the bottom of the tub, staring up at my mom as Jilly screams into the side of her neck. I squeeze my eyes shut, and black blood pulses behind my lids because I don't want to die. I open them, and my head is full of broken glass shredding my soft brain, and Death stands over the tub, and it is the biggest thing in the world. Death points its gun at me, a Tech 9, one of those video game guns that boys think are so cool. It's a terrible gun, but not at this range. Death wears black tactical gear, covered in belts and straps and pouches and all those things little boys think will make them strong. The gas mask hides its face. Tactical gloves cover its hands. It's wearing a black helmet, and this is all overcompensating for how small Death feels inside. On instinct, I look at its shoes. Under Armour zippered tactical boots, and fire sparks inside my head.
Sky?
Where's Stephanie? Is she helping him? Is he helping her? Is she dead? Was I wrong and she's one more final girl notched into his belt? His breath rasps through his gas mask. Then he says something and the mask muffles it. But all my strength leaves my body because I still hear the words.
You'll die alone. And no one cares.
My mom presses the screaming Jilly to the side of her neck.
You need to protect your sister.
And I couldn't even do that.
I'm sorry, Jilly. I'm sorry, Dr. Carroll. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad. I'm sorry, Jeff and Liz. I'm sorry, Fine. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sorry I can't fight anymore.
Sky adjusts his grip on his weapon.
I'm sorry, Adrian.
He points his gun at my face, and its muzzle is a yawning black hole big enough to swallow the world. And Heather is on him, streaking in from out of nowhere, the heavy white porcelain lid of the toilet tank in her hands, and she brings it down on the back of his head. The porcelain lid explodes on impact into 1,000 razor shards that pepper my face. Sky's body bends in one direction, his head bends in another, and he falls forward, catching his face on the edge of the tub as he goes down. He doesn't get up. Where's everyone else?
Back in the cabin. Locked in.
It doesn't make any sense.
But how did you get here?
Heather manages something close to a grin.
Like I said, I'm into some higher level shit that you could never understand.
After what I saw in her room at Chrissy's museum, I don't doubt it for a minute. I start picking myself up out of the jacuzzi, and Heather leans down and starts unbuckling Sky's helmet and gas mask.
Is he alive? Mostly.
Heather works at his chin strap, finally getting it free.
Don't move him. His neck might be broken.
She pushes back his helmet and peels off the gas mask, and I see his face. Dark circles painted around his eyes, hair soaked with sweat, eyelids fluttering. It really is Sky. He must have hated us all so much. Heather stands and delivers a hard kick to his balls. Her kick moves his body like a heavy sack of laundry.
You're right. We shouldn't move him.
Heather punctuates her words with more kicks to his crotch.
Definitely not! Don't want to have a spinal cord injury!
I take a step toward her, and my head spins dangerously fast, feeling like it might float away. I put one hand on her shoulder to steady myself.
Stop! Get his gun.
She bends over and picks it up, then centers it on his chest, looking down through its sights at the monster sprawled on the floor in the wreckage of the eco-friendly bathroom.
Heather, he's her son.
She doesn't acknowledge me. We stand like that for what feels like a very long time. Finally, she lowers the gun, then tosses it into the tub.
Fuck it, right?
Fuck it. No one else dies today.
Well, isn't that a big ball of sunshine?
Heather starts to turn toward the door, but Stephanie has the shotgun against the back of her neck. Through Heather's throat, it's pointed right at my face. Stephanie stands in the square stance, motionless, butt of the gun against her shoulder. Heather's back is to her. I'm on the other side of Heather. Sky's body takes up half the bathroom, and there's nowhere left to run.
That's the second time you've saved yourself by playing possum. How do you do it?
Played in my head?
God damn. To be honest, I barely skimmed your Wikipedia page. I'm not interested in roadkill. This skunky junkie, on the other hand, she's big game.
Fucking super fans.
Whatever, Grandma. My man and I have been running you for weeks like rats in a maze, and now we're gunning you down like fish in a barrel. Stupid old bags don't have a lot to be proud of. This was about as challenging as a wet fart.
What sticks with me is my man, Sky.
We met online. No one's going to remember you losers after this. Sky and I will be heroes. People will be talking about the statement we made here for years to come. You're just pointless nostalgia, and we're here to sweep you into the trash. Everyone needs to stop clinging to the past.
Ugh, pull the trigger or shut the fuck up.
I can see Heather's face, and it's only her voice that's brave.
You're as boring as my last boyfriend.
Stephanie smiles.
Okay.
I have to keep her talking.
You did all this to be famous? You killed all these people just to be on TV?
What else is there?
I remember the file in Dr. Carroll's house, the one with Stephanie's picture on it. I realize how Sky found her.
He reached out to you first, didn't he?
You don't have time for our dating history.
No, he groomed you. He told you how evil we are because he hates his mom, and then he groomed you.
Not even close.
I can tell she doesn't like being an object rather than a subject.
This isn't girl power. You're Sky's puppet. In court, your lawyer's gonna claim emotional coercion. You weren't responsible for your actions. The man was in charge all the way. You'll be just another victim of a powerful, manipulative man.
Don't try to run a game on me, Lynette. We're equals. That's how love works these days.
You think it's about you and Sky? This is about him and his mommy. You're the sad daughter-in-law to his psycho obsession, a footnote in his case file. We'll get the memorials. We'll be the heroes. He'll be embraced by a bunch of sad little boys on the internet. But you won't fit in anywhere. You'll be forgotten because all you ever did was say yes, sir, no, sir, and pulled the trigger when Daddy said,
fuck you!
You know I'm right. Unless you kill him, too. He's still alive.
Heather is darting her eyes from left to right, shaking them no, and her mouth is mouthing no, and she knows what I'm doing, and I ignore her. I look down and to my right.
He's pretty banged up. I bet you could finish him by hand. That would make a statement.
I'm committed now. For the first time in years, I'm not scared. Stephanie's eyes narrow and they flick down to Sky, and that's all I'm going to get. I pray for speed. Everything happens at once. I drop low and shoulder past Heather, leaping up and forward, ignoring the iron brands clamped around my skull. And one arm is going up and out and thrusting the barrel of the shotgun away like I saw Danny do earlier. The air in the bathroom explodes and my hand is on fire, palm searing, sticking to the barrel. And my shoulder breaks and the room fills with gritty gray smoke. Somewhere beside me, Heather is falling into the tub. My feet don't touch the ground and I'm tackling Stephanie. My head clips the door frame as I take her down, and it throbs so hard I almost black out, but not enough to make me forget to land on her body. I hear all the air whoosh out of her lungs when we hit the concrete floor with my full weight on top, the burning hot shotgun trapped between our chests. We're lying half in, half out of the hydrotherapy door, and I'm too weak to hit her or cut her or shoot her, so I just wrap my arms and legs around her and hold on tight. She bucks and squirms and screams and bites, trying to worm her finger into the trigger guard. But she's just a kid after all. And I keep her on the ground, pressed to the tile. My arms keep her from getting any leverage. My legs wrap around her calves to keep them from pushing up. I use my battered chin to force her skull down until I'm pinning her head to the ground and our faces are close enough to kiss. She spits and screams and howls, but she's not going anywhere. And after a while, she knows it.
Kill me!
She starts to scream in my ear, so loud my brain goes white. Eventually, I make out what she's saying.
Kill me! Kill me! Kill me!
They pull me off eventually, and by then, they have flexi-cuffs on Sky, and Marilyn and Heather put a pair on Stephanie. As they drag her to the other side of the room, she keeps her eyes on me.
You should have killed me, you fucking skank!
I'm tired. I hurt everywhere. Fresh pain creeps into every inch of my body.
You'll go to trial. You'll go to prison.
Fuck you! I'll fucking escape!
I'm
so tired of all this hurting and killing and these threats and this endless litany of fear that has been my life.
No, you won't. You're not that smart.
Let her live. Let her and Sky live. Let them live and see just how small and meaningless their murders were. She's killed so many people, and you know what? The world, just as uncooperative and stubborn as always, keeps spinning along. Dying isn't the important thing. It's nothing more than the punctuation mark on the end of your life. It's everything that came before that that matters. Punctuation marks, most people skip right over them. They don't even have a sound.